I'm with the Minnesota Mycological Society, and we've been around since 1899. We've got our 125th anniversary next year.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of excited about that. We're the second oldest continuously running mycological society in the country.
Nice.
So we were started. And actually, first meeting was in 1898, and it was started by the first registered woman physician in Minneapolis. So, and she did it because she wanted to try find alternative sources of nutrition for women and children, because she also was one of the founding doctors of Northwestern Women's and Children's Hospital, which is now part of Abbott Orthos. And so she was that. And as you can see, that's a picture of her with a bunch of mushrooms. So, and she also was one of the founding members of Methodist Hospital. It's over in St. Louis Park. So people often ask, what's a mushroom? Well, a mushroom is its own kingdom, you know, of fungi, and this one's kind of interesting. I don't know. There's been a TV show about this now, hasn't there?
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of it. I think being interested in mushrooms that I would, but yeah, the genus is Cordyceps. And it invades certain insects. And what's really wild is then before it kills them, it makes them climb up to the very highest spot in their habitat. And then it fruits. So it gets to disperse its spores real far and wide. So here you can see it. That's a pretty cool picture.
Now, is cordyceps also used medicinally?
Yes, it is very much.
Okay.
It's actually considered it's in where it's often collected in like Nepal and that area. It can be very expensive. Now, there it's not usually found high up. It's actually colonizing things that grow in the ground.
Right. Yeah, so I've also heard that cordyceps is particularly challenging to cultivate.
Yeah, well, many mushrooms are. We're gonna talk about that. Okay, so I just want to make sure I got my rolling my mouse here properly. Now I'm seeing a blank screen there. Let's try again. Okay, so it's the fungi are the hinge pin of the cardinal cycle. They are one of the few things that will break down things that are, you know, like wood and that those kind of things. They don't really break down without the help of fungi. And also, certain ones eat lignin, which is also a big component of wood. So cellulose, and, you know, they live everywhere, all over, land, water, air, inside us. Course, part of our biome. And there's an estimated 3 million fungal species. And actually, I've heard that number has gone up, the estimates, and less than 10% have been identified. So, and of those fungal species, 30 to 50,000 are what we call mushrooms. And what we call mushrooms, you say, what's a mushroom? Well, a mushroom is only the fruit, what we see as a mushroom, is only the fruit of that particular species of fungus. So only a very small portion of fungi are mushrooms. About 10,000 are found in North America, and about 5,000 are found here in Minnesota. Those are just estimates. And one of the challenges we have is that you don't know they're there unless they fruit.
Well, you can see the white mycelium.
Sometimes. But it's hard to tell what they are when you're looking at that.
Sure.
So, and actually Minnesota, because we're at a crossroads between multiple ecological habitats,
We
actually have a lot of mushroom diversity, more so than many other parts of the country.
Eastern woodlands at the right place.
And boreal forest in the north.
Oh.
So. And so mushrooms fall into, you know, basically three categories. They're saprophytic, so they consume dead and dying plant material. We already talked about that. Those are the ones that we can cultivate because it's growing on dead material. Mycorrhizal, these live in conjunction with another plant. In fact, 95% or more of all vascular plants have a fungal symbiont that lives with it. And some of them are really, there's some plants that can't even grow without that fungal symbiont. For instance, orchids. Orchids, in fact, until that was discovered, you know, back when the English were going all over the world bringing stuff back for their, you know, who could have the fanciest botanical garden in their mansion, right? You know, they brought back beautiful orchids and you know, as a bragging, you know, rights. But they couldn't get them to reproduce until a guy figured out that there was a fungal symbiont, and that's the only way. Now, of course, we know that, and so they're not that hard, many of them, to reproduce, but you need that for orchids. So most often the ones we see here are living, those ones don't have to produce mushrooms, but in the case of most of the mycorrhizal ones that we find here, they're associated more with trees, things that live a long time. And then some of them are parasites or pathogens that actually do harm to those plants, trees. Huh?
Like blight?
Yeah, blights would be fungus that do that. They're fungal pathogens. But there's other ones that are parasitic that actually create fruiting bodies that are like mushrooms. You know, and actually the one you see on the right that's called, common name is chicken of the woods.
Yeah.
Which you may see. I've seen it. I used to live in New Hope for many years, grew up in Gold Valley. So I've seen that one growing around here at times. And that's actually considered a parasite.
And is it true that the parasitic fungi would typically infest weakened plants more?
I would say that's probably true in the case of parasitic fungi that attack the mushrooms that attack trees. Usually they also have a saprophytic component. So what they're doing is they're actually eating the heartwood, which is dead, and consuming that. And that ends up weakening the tree, you know, and that's why, you know, sometimes you'll see, you know, big oak trees and they fall over and they're totally hollow inside.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Something's.
Yeah. And we've been finding, so as part of the habitat restoration where we pulled buckthorns, we discovered someone treated a bunch of buckthorns We suspect that they
suspect, yeah, allegedly. But on those like allegedly treated buckthorns, there's like this black fungi, and I did take a picture of it if you want to see, that's like eaten away the roots, and you just yoink the dead plant out.
Right.
And you just pull the dead buckthorn out?
Yeah.
But there are buckthorn is this way. It doesn't, the whatever was allegedly sprayed on them didn't completely kill the plant. So there are these little like branches coming out from the bottom of the tree, even though the root system had been minimized from the top of the tree.
So of course my brain is just like, I hope, because it's a lot more of the fungi than you would normally see. Like, I hope this doesn't affect the forest negatively.
Yeah, it's hard to say, being that buckthorn isn't native to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to say what might be going after it. And I'd be curious to see the picture.
Yeah, like after the presentation.
Yeah. Okay, so mycology is the study of mushrooms and other fungi. You know, and as we talked about it, mushrooms are the fruiting body of fungi. Now, some of the other things that we find may not be fruiting bodies. You know, things that we see that are coming. You may have heard of a mushroom called chaga, or medicinal. You talk about medicinal mushrooms, a very popular medicinal mushroom. And the actual chaga itself is a sterile conch. It's not a fruiting body. It has nothing to do with the fruiting of the mushroom. Or its reproduction at all. So they're not plants, obviously. They don't photosynthesize. They get their nutrition from other sources. And in the case of mycorrhizal mushrooms, they are symbiotes. So they get their part of their nutrition from the tree. And in exchange, they provide the tree with nutrients and water that they can collect more efficiently than the tree roots can. Because in a square yard of soil, there could be up to a mile of mycelium. There can be very, very, very small fine filaments. So it's incredible. They establish and grow with certain plants. They talk about the names changing. What we found is that the way they used to give them Latin names, they would compare them to another mushroom, look at it and say, well, these look really a lot alike and they seem really similar, so they must be related to each other. We do the DNA sequencing and they're not related. So they give them all new names and it confuses the heck out of everybody.
Happens in
Oh yeah, well, it's happening a lot, and it happens multiple times.
It's just because evolution happens that way, it just favors certain characters.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the problem with the DNA is they do them, and then when they first do it, you know, they say, oh, it's not related to what we thought, so they give them their own genus, maybe. And then later on, something else that wasn't related to it, they find out it's related. So now they've had two geniuses, and now they got to say, no, maybe they're either the same one and come up with yet another
one.
For historically, people in the mushroom community kind of encouraged mushroom hunters to learn Latin names because they don't change, right? It's unlike a common name that you could call something in here, and then in another part of the country, that same name could be used for a different mushroom,
right?
So it's confusing. Well, it's the other way around now, is that with the internet and everything, the common names have become more stable, and the Latin names are changed constantly. So that the good news is the common names, with the advent of communication over the internet, people, there isn't regional names as much as there used to. So, here's, you know, 99.5%. Got a great picture there showing that. Here's mycelium growing. Don't know what kind. Look like they're maybe just growing on the leaves. And, you know, here's the kind of trade-off. And what you see in the lower left corner, that's actually the actual place where the fungus and the tree root are connected. They actually create a little natural, you know, appendage that connects, that creates that opportunity to transfer the nutrients back and forth. So,
no, lung alveoli. It looks like lung
alveoli. Oh, those things. Okay.
Yeah, it does a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the people that go out and look for mushrooms, you know, they call them foragers. You know, and when you hear the term foray, that's people going on a mushroom hunt. Random mushroom facts: largest organism in the world is an Amelaria mushroom, 2,200 acres, 2,400 years old. You go anywhere in there and you find one of those mushrooms, they are absolutely genetically identical across that 2,400 acres. It's a stand of popple, aspen in Oregon. There's also a huge one up in Michigan that's like 200, 300, 400 acres. And the honey fungus actually is a parasite. And so it actually eventually kills some of the trees. We only see the fruiting body and spores. People equate them to be like, you know, people are always trying to make analogies to something they're familiar with. And it's really hard with fungi because they are not like other things in so many ways. And so sometimes people talk about spores like seeds, but they're really not. They're more like pollen. They're only one part of a sexual combination. The thing that can be confusing about fungi is they've documented certain fungi can have hundreds, if not thousands, of different genders. So
that would be sexes instead of genders, right?
Yes,
perhaps. Yep.
For all, I mean, for all we know, maybe the fungi do have genders.
Maybe they don't. however you want to break it down, I guess. But yes, they have. They can combine in many different ways, and they're different. The mycelium is the organism that lives either underground most often, or in the case of the saprophytic fungi, they live in the substrate that they're colonizing, you know, the wood or whatever. 60 species are bioluminescent. Honey fungus that we were just talking about.
Is it edible?
Yes. It's considered a good edible. Some people talk about, edibility. So we've got 50% of the mushrooms, it's just rough numbers, 50% are inedible, 25% are edible, 20% will make you sick. 4% are good to eat, and less than 1% are deadly.
Or as Terry Pratchett once said, some mushrooms are edible. All mushrooms are edible. Some are only edible only once.
They're all edible. Just
only once.
When you're out if you're going to go out mushroom hunting, you got to be really aware of these guys, because there's lots of them in Minnesota these days, ticks. So you need to protect yourself. And that can be, here's just a short list of diseases that we have here in Minnesota. Kind of by the order of their commonness. We're seeing more Rocky Mountain spotted fever these days than in the past. This is probably the best way to protect yourself, is to treat your clothes and stuff with a product that's got a chemical permethrin. It's not meant to treat your skin or anything. It's not a repellent.
Is it a pesticide?
Yes. The chemical, chemical comes from... When you put it on your clothes, it bonds with the fabric, and once it dries, it's not toxic to cats anymore because they really can't absorb it. But if it were wet, yes, it can be toxic to cats. And it's a chemical that's derived from originally from the chrysanthemum.
Interesting.
And it's a neurotoxin for insects.
Is that what they put in the collars for dogs?
Not permethrin, but you'll see. Maybe they did. What they often, but you'll see sprays that have it for treating dog beds.
Ooh.
You know, so that, you know, the dog has ticks and gets into the, you know, lays in its bed, and the fabric's treated with permethrin. You know, and you know, I think it tends to really affect insects more than just about anything else. But I do know that cats can be receptive. You know, it's amazing. Cats are, for how much you make them sick. I've got cats. You know, there's the list of plants. It's just crazy long. You know, I mean, we used to grow lilies. I bring them inside and stuff. Cats, and you know, cats never touched them. Found out, well, if they did, that'd be really bad. It could kill them. So, much less lethal than what you call it with Christmas. Everybody used to be poinsettia. Everybody used to be worried about it. The poinsettia really aren't very toxic to anything.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not good for you, for a dog, but not toxic. So when we're identifying them, it's really important that we look at everything about them, the season, all the characteristics, habitat, all of those things are pieces of information that we can use to help identify different mushrooms, you know. You know, what kind of woods, overall appearance, you know, what kind of spore-bearing surface. Some have gills, like you see in the mushroom at the grocery store. Some have pores, you know, some have pits, like morels, for instance. We just got done with that season. You know, what their stem looks like. All those different things. Tough, brittle, what they smell like, what they taste like. You can safely taste even a deadly poisonous mushroom if you don't swallow it.
Okay.
It has to be ingested. It's not something that...
You don't absorb it to get it, like, you
know, no, the toxins don't get absorbed. They have to be ingested.
Oh, yeah.
Not typically. Well, there's some toxins that, of some mushrooms, that there's ways of, you know, treating, you know, processing to remove the toxin. So, and a lot of those tend to have water soluble toxins. So people will boil or stuff like that to remove the toxins. You know, typically it seems like a lot of work, but I know some people that very much enjoy certain poisonous mushrooms that most people don't eat.
People eat milkweed too.
Well, if you don't have to boil the shoots. You don't have to boil the little the pods before they get too big. And you don't have to boil the flowers.
I've eaten all three.
Unless you're allergic to latex.
Well, potentially that could be a problem. But
yeah.
I hadn't thought about that, but I've eaten all three, and they're actually pretty darn tasty.
Pretty darn tasty. The little pods are real nice. So, you know, there's about 200 edible mushrooms in Minnesota, all kinds of different types. And a few deadly ones. Destroying angel is the deadliest one here in Minnesota. It's an Amanita. And deadly Galerina, which is not related, but interestingly has the exact same chemical in it, that same toxin as destroying angel.
Oh.
So two different mushrooms, unrelated,
right,
develop the same toxin. And then false morels, there's certain types of false morels, and that's what I was talking about, where people do the processing. And there's a bunch of others one of the most common ones that we see is one that can make you sick. It's called it grows out in grassy areas, big, beautiful white mushrooms. Look a lot like the mushrooms you get at the store. It's very large, like a big portobello. Yeah, except the portobello's always got brown gills and a brown spore print.
Okay.
These have a green spore.
Whoa. And which one are you talking about again?
The green spore, green gilled Lepiota.
Okay.
Which they changed the name, it's now Lepiota. And they put part of the Latin name has it's like chlorophyllium, so like chlorophyll, oh, like
green.
Yeah.
I'm just
kidding. That's poison pie. Yeah, poison pie. Paxillus. Yeah.
I'm just amused that, like, one of my friends keeps telling me about how the destroying angel, or she calls it deadly angel mushroom, terrifies her and all that. And today I'm discovering it's one of the primary deadly mushrooms.
It is probably the deadliest mushroom. They say that, you know, depending on toxin, you know, and that can be very variable, but the toxin in a square centimeter, so like less than a half inch of a mushroom, would be enough to kill it.
No, but it's okay to put it in your mouth and spit it out.
That's right.
Right.
So with mushroom toxins, is it normally present in the entire fruit, or is it normally found more in one area?
As with many, 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 many things, it's very poorly studied. But I would say it, you know, in general, it's throughout the entire fruity body. There may be concentrations more in one part of it, but I don't know if anybody's ever gone to the trouble of really trying to figure that out. So, but one thing that's important, just like you said, don't want to eat milkweed if you're allergic to latex, perhaps. You can be allergic to any mushroom. And so wild mushrooms, you know, ones that are commonly eaten by lots of people, might make you sick. And they might not make you allergic sick necessarily. It might be a different mechanism, but I mean, there's some delicious mushrooms that I know several people that they just can't tolerate them. They can't eat them. They don't know why. They taste good to them, but after they eat them, it really messes with them.
Like GI or like high?
GI.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's allergic really.
Or just as we substitute.
Yeah, just something in them just does not digest well, and they have GI issues. Yeah.
Yeah, could be a mast cell activation issue too.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and but one well documented is morels. People eat morels for years and years and years, and all of a sudden they can't eat them. And they believe that's some kind of allergic, you know, immune response, something going on there. And if they're really, you know, fanatical morel hunters, it's really disappointing. And typically, wild mushrooms should never be eaten raw. Morels is a perfect example. They don't know what the toxin is in it, but it is common for people to eat raw or undercooked morels and get sick from it. So you always want to thoroughly cook. You know, and you want to know that it's 100% what it is before you think about eating. So, and again, from a tolerance standpoint, if it's something new that you've never eaten, don't eat a whole pot full of them. If they're going to make you sick, that'll just make you sicker. You have basic mushroom groups, and I'm going to kind of speed this up because I know we're running out of time. Here's our common yellow morel that grows here. It's a state mushroom. We're the first state in the country to have a state mushroom. And it's the morel. Here's a black morel, different species. Typically grows more in the northern part of the state than down here, but they do grow around the metro area as well. They're always totally hollow inside. That's how one of the key identification characteristics. Here's one, hollow inside. You notice it's not connected all the way at the bottom like these were. And it's just a little different species, but it is still a true morel. These, not a great picture, but these are not morels. And if you look, you can see how these don't really have pits. They're all folds. And they're only connected at the very top. And this picture's kind of horrible, but they're also filled with like a cotton material.
They're not hollow.
But they're edible and good. And for a long time, there was some question about their edibility. But that's people eat them commonly. Here you again see the cottony material in there. And it's not pitted. This one, Gyrometria. These, the Escalante, which is what's pictured above, is that poisonous one that people sometimes process. It's commonly eaten in parts of Finland and stuff like that where they really enjoy it. But it grows here in Minnesota. It's a northern latitude type. But this has had a lot of controversy over the years just because most of the field guides have said, don't go near any of these. Mm-hmm. And it's become, as we've understood better, the toxin that's in this one, that many of the related species don't have any of it. And so they're actually quite good. So here's another picture of one. And as you can see, they're called false morels, but they don't really look like a morel.
They're pretty weird.
Yeah, very, they're greenish, you know, yeah. Kind of.
Kind of.
And here you can see an example. You can see how, you know, they're kind of hollowy inside in a weird sort of way. And then they're, you know, their stem is kind of multi-chambered and stuff like that. And of course, this people find, not this time of year, but later in the year, they find these. They say, oh, I found a morel.
Oh, really?
No way.
Yeah, they do.
It looks like something, but not
just the shape.
Yeah, it's the shape, but they kind of
stink.
Yeah, well, and you know, if they're a little slimy, they look a little pitted. And, oh, yeah, no, they're nasty. But they're actually edible. They're edible, and the stems are
up of juice at the bottom.
The stems are like styrofoam. They're weird, but they're supposedly edible. I've never eaten them, but in Asian cultures they eat some of them. Here you see another one where you know you see the pits, stuff like that. But yeah, they got the goo on them. That's their strategy for
disperse its spores is through insects. They attract the flies. Attract the flies, and that carries the spores around. You know, here we got a bunch of morels just kind of. We have tooth mushrooms. These are hedgehog mushrooms. Not a whole lot of mushrooms are in this grouping, tooth mushrooms, but this is an excellent edible, very easy to identify because it's got teeth on the bottom side instead of gills. As you can see, sometimes bugs like your mushrooms too. See, they got some wormholes in them. This one is a Horecium. You can cut me off anytime.
No, she's just asking more what stink ones.
I wanted to know exactly.
And I kind of think it smells like compost juice, like if you let grass sit in a pile. And
yeah,
like
a lot of times, yeah, or mulch. You get a lot of mulch and stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
And when it's old, not fresh mulch, but
right.
Old mulch.
Right.
These, you might have heard of a mushroom that people claim, you know, claim some medicinal qualities called shaving mane.
Lion's mane,
yeah, or lion's mane, not shaving mane, lion's mane. That's right.
But that there's some neurological benefits.
Well, that's what some of the studies seem to imply that they have and promote certain neurological brain health. Yeah. This is one of the species that's in that genus, and. There's several of them, but they're a cultivatable mushroom because they grow on wood. They seem to like maples. So, which not much stuff grows on maple. Or even in association with maple. There's almost no mushrooms the fruiting mushrooms that grow mycorrhizally with maple. But this one will. White seems to like dead maple growing up there.
Must be a bunch in Vermont.
Yeah. Well, here's another one that likes maple too. This one's called Northern Tooth, and it's got spines on it like teeth. This one is not poisonous, but it's super tough.
Oh.
I mean, you look at it and say, nah, it's not something you want.
Is it rice in the middle?
No, like that's the teeth. It's magnified.
So if you look, oh, okay.
If you look on the underside here, that's what it looks like. Little spines sticking up.
Like the gills sort of thing.
Well, it's what carries the spores, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It serves functionally the same purpose, but different. Then you have mushrooms that are polypores. So here they have pores on the bottom side, which is where the spores are released from. This is chicken of the woods. And we see this very beautiful mushroom. And it's a very nice edible. What's really different about it doesn't really taste like what you think a mushroom would taste like. It's a very, very different sort of flavor.
Is the texture
profile.
The same?
Yeah, it can be pretty much the same or tough. If you pick them too old, they kind of dry out and get kind of stringy. Some people say they have a similar texture to chicken breast when they get a little stringy. I personally only like them when they're really, really young. And but I like the flavor, but it almost has, I'll say a little sourness, like lemony. It's really different. Yeah. Here's one. These grow, the orange ones with the yellow pores grow right on the wood, on trees and stumps and things like that. These are different species, and they look like they're growing on the ground, but they're actually growing from wood too. That's very cool. Usually growing from tree roots, and they have white pores, and they can have just the most lovely pinkish salmon color to them.
Here you can see, this was actually a picture of mine. That tree had literally hundreds of pounds of chicken of the woods growing.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, literally, yeah. It was a big tree, big oak tree. And what was what I found fascinating about this is I went back. Sometimes you can go back the next year and it'll have some more growing on it. I went back the next year and the whole inside of the tree was dust. It ate the entire tree, the whole inside of the tree. You pull the bark away and it was just like sand. It's really wild, very, very cool. And I mean, it ate that whole tree, and there was probably total, I mean, like I say, close to 200 pounds grew on it over the course of it. So.
So do you think that tree was already dead and it was feeding on it, or it killed it?
Well, this is the kind of the question about that that's still poorly studied, as many things are, is that the belief is that Leoporus is the chicken of the woods is parasitic. And so it's living in the tree before it dies. But a lot of times it doesn't fruit until after the tree's dead. That's kind of what they think. But, and I don't really know, because, I mean, you'll see it growing on dead wood that's laying on the ground. You know, I've seen people have it growing in their wood pile, you know, wood they cut for, you know, for the fireplace. You know, so... it can be grown, but it, you know, you get the mycelium to colonize wood, but it's almost impossible to get it to fruit. And it's almost impossible to get it to fruit in any kind of quantity that you can eat. I mean, you might get it to fruit, you know, just a little thing. I have a theory about that, in that it requires a tremendous amount of food.
Mm-hmm.
Fruit. And that, you know, people are trying to grow it on a piece of log this big, and that's just not going to get it done. It just doesn't have enough food to do stuff like this. So here's this is another polypora that's very common around here, hen of the woods. We find this all over this area. I picked many, many. Some on New Hope City property.
We're in Crystal here.
I know. But close. It might have been Crystal. I don't know. I don't know quite where the border is. Might have been Crystal.
I don't think anyone here is going to know. So.
Well, and... But please understand, from that standpoint, why would that be a problem?
I don't know. It shouldn't be a problem.
It's like picking fruit.
I know.
Picking blueberries. You know?
We've now actually planted.
I mean, huh?
We've planted fruits now.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's great. Great. Oh, there's a food forest there now.
Well, it's a very small 8-tree food forest.
Oh, okay. What kind of stuff you got?
I don't know. I know apples for sure.
They're a challenge because I grow apples in my yard too. And once the apple maggots really establish themselves, you're just screwed. Unless you get out the pesticides, there's just not much, you know, or bag them, literally bag the individual apples, because they will absolutely destroy them so that they're, I mean, maybe you can make cider out of them or something like that, but really, they're not very appetizing to eat. You know, I mean, they won't make you sick, of course. Sure, pretty misshapen and nasty, and they start to rot early because of the tunnels. But, you know, mushrooms are fruit like berries, like blueberry. You know, one of the common things, I think, blueberries. You know? From that standpoint, there really is no evidence
and the studies that have been done really don't show that over harvest is really possible, because you're eating the fruit. What's much more important is habitat loss, soil disturbance, erosion, things like that have a much bigger impact, as they do on everything. But, you know, the mushrooms themselves are, you know, I mean, it's not that you should go clean out the woods, you know. There's no reason to do that and no point in it. But the actual act of going out and foraging and picking mushrooms does no harm to the organism itself.
I'm familiar with recent legislation that was proposed at the state level regarding regulating mushroom foraging.
It's being talked about, but it hasn't been published yet. Yeah,
we're very
aware of it.
Can you tell us that?
Well, I actually kind of ended up hearing it directly from the DNR, that and what it's right now, you're allowed to pick mushrooms for personal use everywhere, including state parks. No. For personal use, you can pick mushrooms in state parks, and you can pick berries. And generally, even though the regulation doesn't say anything about nuts, most nuts you could probably pick and see, you know, harvest and see. And what the DNR has, or the state park system, and it's a little unclear how expansive what they're thinking about, because the regulation package that they're putting together, one of its goals is to make the regulations on public lands kind of the same, you know, try to make it common, you know, so the rule, so you're not, because right now it's a patch.
Oh.
This rule is here for this kind of woods, and that kind of woods is a different rule, and this, you know, so they're saying, and it's not just about mushrooms, it's other things too. You know, you have things that you're allowed to do here, but you're not allowed to do there. And so they want to try to make them, you know, make them consistent. And, you know, but one of the things they're considering is creating a quite restrictive bag limit on foraging mushrooms, on picking mushrooms, definitely in the state parks. But again, how expansive that is. But I mean, the bag limit is such that it would functionally ban mushroom foraging. I mean, we're talking about the mushrooms like this one. You wouldn't be able to pick all of that, because it's too big. And that's kind of, I mean, that's, as far as I'm concerned, not very well thought out, unless your goal is to not make it, not allow it, you know, at all. I mean, you know, to say that, well, yeah, you can have this much, and if it's bigger than that, you know, there's mushrooms that, one mushroom is bigger than the bag one.
I take it that the Mycological Society is already making plans to sit in on and comment on various
things. Well, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I heard this from one of the assistant commissioners of the DNR. And
which one?
Hmm?
For which one? Parks?
Yeah.
Phil?
No. Jennifer. She's assistant commissioner for state parks, trails, and forests.
Bill retired.
Anyway, I think her first name is Jennifer Watt something. You have to look it up.
Jennifer Conrad? I used to work at the DNR.
But basically, when we, you know, I was told this, I said, oh, well, I'm interested in talking to people about that and seeing what they're thinking and why they want to do this, what problems there are, because we're interested in, there's problems, we want to be part of the solution. And the truth is, they won't talk to us.
That's disappointing, to say the least.
And they sure didn't seek out, you know, and their response was, wow, it's a little late in the process. But at the same time, they didn't seek out any information about what they're trying to regulate from people that know.
Does it sound like a solution in search of a problem kind of situation?
I mean, I have some personal feelings.
You are being recorded, so.
You know, I think there are people within our land, I'll speak carefully, our land management system that just don't think that harvesting things from public land is appropriate use of that land. And to carry to the point that some of them might even say, you know, we really shouldn't harvest timber, let alone animals or other plant matter. And this proposal that they're considering, I think they, just because the rules have allowed it very clearly for a very long time, that they're reluctant to just say no again. That may be their preference. As it is right now, you're only allowed to pick edible mushrooms. You're not allowed to pick not edible mushrooms. Now, why, in most cases, would you want to pick not edible mushrooms? But you know they don't want
habitat restoration.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that is at least some people's concerns. But again, we're back to what are we harvesting?
And since we have had people like the indigenous people of this land taking care of the land and probably harvesting mushrooms for centuries, it's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, of course we are. And you know, part of it, is that, you know, they just, you know, it's somehow an extractive activity when it really. I mean, I question how much that is. And if there's a problem of some, you know, things that are happening that really, because commercial mushroom harvest is regulated. It's not allowed in state parks. It is allowed by permit in state forests. But I don't know anybody who has a permit or is even trying to get one.
You kind of feel like I pointed you down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean, I'm about to say.
It is a rabbit hole.
Yeah, but you can just ask Rachel to finish up. Okay, yeah, I was going to say, we could probably discuss this for hours, but we have several members of the public here if they had any questions for you.
Right. And here's some ones that are kind of big.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Oh, and
there's
the battle. You know, and we had a park employee at a state park approach one of our members who was carrying one of maybe not quite that big, and they said, "Well, you can't eat all that." And we said, well, no, not at once. You know, but I mean, part of mushroom foraging is the preservation and preparing of mushrooms because they have such a short window of opportunity.
Right.
Most most kinds of mushrooms you only find once a year.
I
mean,
I consider foraging to be part of recreating.
Absolutely.
Can you pick a mushroom?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Eastern Europeans, they pick all kinds of mushrooms that most people don't really care for because they aren't particularly flavorful or anything. I mean, they're not poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
And they pickle. And they, like, really like them pickled.
That's villainous.
That's
lots of, they like a lot of ale and mushrooms, like a lot of them. I got a friend who's a mushroom, who's a Russian chef.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you, if it doesn't have dill in it, there's something wrong. He just loves his dill. So
I'm German Russian.
Oh.
I totally get it. Yeah, I have a Russian friend whose family goes to mushroom picking.
Yeah. Well, and they pick all kinds of stuff that you know, even us at the Mycological Society aren't really familiar with considered, you know, common edible species that you find in a book. But they pickle them, they can them, marinate them, dry them, do all kinds of different things. Here's one, pheasant pack. We see quite often, likes to grow on dead elm trees after have expired for a while. This one here, they call the artist conch because the bottom of it, you can do like scrimshaw.
Birch, right?
Yes. Yeah, it grows on birch. Two mushrooms. So here's porcini that we find here. King boletes. And these are such that, you know, pretty hard to have more, you know, if you're having a very small bag, to have more than one or two of those.
Oh.
These are super, they grow super fast and they're done super quick. Like you've got about 3 or 4 day window. From the time that they're big enough to pick to the time that they're...
And the king bolete is a type of porcini?
Yes. Actually, when they refer to king bolete, they're talking about the European species Cibolitis edulis,
okay,
which is the porcini. But there's a bunch of mushrooms that are all part of that same family. And we have a number of them here in the United States. Here's a Cibolitis bicolor. Real pretty. Another good edible. But you can see here the tubes where the spores are.
Oh.
This one looks really pretty, but it's bitter. Really bitter. Bitter bolete. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm curious. I'd be curious if, you know, there's certain cultures that really like bitter.
Yeah.
In their things, you know, some of the Vietnamese and Hmong, they have certain vegetables that are like, I find them to be, yeah, I mean, it's like, whoa, you like this? Yeah, well, yeah, it's a developed, you know, acquired taste, I'm sure. I'm just curious if they like these.
Because they are edible, but they're
better. Oh, yeah, there's nothing, they're not poisonous. Just, they're just quite bitter. Then you got a bunch of guild mushrooms, chanterelles, we have a lot of those in Minnesota. They have some lookalikes that can make you sick, these jack-o'-lanterns. That's actually a picture of mine, too. Growing out of a base of an oak tree. Black trumpets, they're really tasty. Yeah. People don't like the German name. Trumpets of Death.
Oh,
Toten from Peyton, and they in French they're de morte.
Oh,
I had dead man's fingers growing in my garden.
Oh yeah, they're pretty cool. They're pretty cool.
I know, but I love them.
Unsettling. This is an interesting mushroom. Golden oysters. They're non-native.
Oh, really?
They've escaped cultivation.
Oh.
And they're working their way north, and people are starting to start finding them in Minneapolis area, the metro area, a little bit. We believe they escaped cultivation somewhere down near Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And they've been working their way north for the last 10 years. It's going to be
so
there.
Well,
that's a good question. That the question is, what kind of impact are they?
Yeah.
They seem to be very aggressive. And they seem to grow on the same kinds of things like the pheasant back that I showed you the picture of.
Okay.
Right, it's out.
So they could potentially.
And they obviously could displace native oyster mushrooms as well. But as you see, when they get going, they really fruit. You get, you know, but they're an Asian species. Or some people say they originated in Russia, but they've been cultivated for a very, very long time. So, you know, through cultivation, they've made them grow fast, tolerate various, you know, varying conditions, stuff like that. So we're gonna be seeing them. It'll be interesting because right now we're mostly seeing them growing on elm.
Okay.
But I'll be curious to see what else they might decide they're gonna grow.
And are they saprophytic?
Yes.
For the south, what do they prefer? Or is it still just elm?
That's the only place I've really ever seen them. I mean, I was down in Iowa this spring. And I saw quite a few of them down there.
And it's also a limiting factor. That's good.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, when they cultivate them on something other than elmwood. I mean, that's not a common cultivation substrate. So it'll be curious to see what other things they might
decide is okay to mulch.
Yeah, what other kinds of things they'll find as suitable substrate going forward. Because right now, the only place I've ever seen them is on elms.
Are they good tasty?
Hmm?
Are they tasty?
Very.
I'm just saying, like, and this is a case where, I mean, not to bring it back to politics, but this is a case where we need all, like, the foragers to find all the golden oysters they can.
Yeah. We're not going to solve any problems like that. No.
Because you end up spreading spores as you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you're doing
it. I don't know how much of that actually. There's some controversy about whether spreading spores is really helps that much.
Really?
Well, you have to remember, I mean, mushrooms produce trillions and trillions of spores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our distribution of them as people and animals, I won't say it doesn't have an impact, but it's really hard to tell what it is, you know.
Okay, or just
they're just their own thing. Here's some more honey mushrooms. We have quite a few of those around here. Here you see some that grow in the spring and more often in the fall, shaggy manes. They're a mushroom that's one of the inky cap family, and you see their strategy for spreading spores is they digest themselves, turn into ink. Yeah, when you pick these, because they are delicious edible, and you pick these, you have to do something with them right away. If you put them in the fridge overnight, they'll look like that. They'll eat themselves. Yeah.
Ooh,
then there's Lactarius pepperatus, which tastes really peppery.
Okay.
Like really, like you take a bite of it, and it's like hot peppers, but like a really hot black pepper flavor more than anything. Yep, Lactarius inguo. These are beautiful. They're also very tasty edible, but quite dramatic. Russulas, which is a very, very common species.
I've seen this.
Oh, yeah, the red ones are can be just huge quantities of them.
Well, and I saw that they would be eaten by the antelope, but my friends were like, no, no, no.
Well, that's not any kind of guide to edibility is what animals
not are. In the basement or not, internet, Rachel.
Not that. These are generally, they're not poisonous,
okay.
But what I know people that do like to eat them, or some of them, and they go and they taste, if they taste good, they'll pick them and eat them.
Okay.
If they taste kind of, they call it acrid, they just don't taste good. They taste a little chemical-y or they have after metallic or something, then those aren't good. But Russulas are one of the ones that Eastern Europeans really can like. Some of them. There is actually one of my favorite mushrooms is a Russula, but it's a very specific species. Here's the green spore lepiota. They grow on lawns and see them out grassy areas.
They're one of the most poisonous, you said?
No, they'll make you really sick though.
Oh, okay.
But they're not. They won't kill you. They won't kill you. They won't kill you though. So you can see the green spore burn.
Mm-hmm.
And these are Amanita, and we have lots of these in Minnesota. These are poisonous. They also have some psychoactive compounds in them. Some people are interested in exploring that, but it's usually not so good when people get sick and then they.
Yeah, it's a compound that would need to be separated from the.
And there are people that do that. This one actually, the compound, what's in it is water soluble, so this mushroom can be detoxified by boiling.
Mm-hmm.
But why? it can. But this genus has some of the most deadly mushrooms in the world in it. Here, these, again, not lethal, but will make you very sick. Very pretty, though. Beautiful mushrooms. And there can be huge quantities of them. And you can see how they kind of grow out of this egg-shaped thing. So you need to be, when you're picking other stuff, it's possible for people to pick them accidentally. And they're very young because they don't realize it. This one is, again, this is the destroying angel. There's several different subspecies. This is, again, an Amanita, and this has amatoxin in it. And what it does is you eat it, and within 4 to 6 hours, you get sick, quite sick. GI, kind of really bad. And then you feel better. And while you're feeling better, it's destroying your liver.
And you're already dead, and there's
and
nothing.
It doesn't take like 40 days or something?
No, it doesn't take that long. It takes like you feel better, and then 24 to 48 hours of that, after that, you may need a liver transplant because it's a toxin that your liver can't break down, so it just keeps cycling through, killing your liver. And
are they grown like in the metro, or like where are you finding
anywhere?
Like in lawns?
No, this one won't likely be in lawns. This will be more in woods.
Okay.
There's an exception to every rule because mushrooms do whatever they name will please sometimes. But no, this is a forest habitat mushroom. It's usually don't find it, until
probably August.
Oh, but we can put it in our mouth and then spit it out.
Yep, you can.
Oh, God.
Gwen catch me doing that.
I mean, if you know what it is, why?
Right.
But I know some people that, you know, like, just to prove a point, you know, they say, see, it's really safe to handle these deadly poisonous mushrooms. You and I both know it's a deadly poisonous mushroom, and I'm going to chew on it and spit it out. Okay.
Okay, so you've seen someone do that.
Yes.
I wonder what
it is. I actually saw somebody I know do it on the internet, you know, for their, you know,
yeah,
pointing out that it is safe to handle,
uh-huh,
you know, kind of trying to reduce mycophobia, you know, and stuff. And I said, why? You know, she got really indignant when I told her that I thought it was not really
impressive.
Like, what if someone
I just don't think what you're doing is a great idea. I don't think it's a huge, good communication
factor. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I know you could do it. I mean, I don't have any problem with, you know, the idea or telling people you can do it, but to actually put it on, you know,
yes,
your blog and in a video, huh?
Are they getting big and huge?
They don't get real huge. This one's a pretty big one. This one's probably maybe 10 inches tall with a cap.
That is huge. It looks huge in the picture.
Yeah. But a lot of them are smaller. There's certain varieties that have, instead of this big thick stem like this, they have a real, see now this one here is, these are pretty thick stem too. But here you see some that are, you know, have a real thin skinny stem. You know, and they're not, these aren't quite so big, but they, one of the things that we, the one of the ways when you find mushrooms, you know, that might be this, you don't want to just pick or cut them up. You want to dig down and pull the bottom of them up to see this cup, because that's the key identification characteristic.
Really?
Now, people sometimes say, oh, you don't want to pull your mushrooms up. Now you're messing with mycelium. They've done studies on it. Doesn't make a bit of difference.
Okay. So cutting them versus pulling them.
Doesn't matter. I mean, if you pull them, you sure don't want to put them in your basket like that, because they're all dirt. They're going to get dirt over everything. If you're looking to pick them to eat, you know, you kind of want to keep the dirt in the woods, you know, so even if you pull them up, just, you know, you cut the dirt off, scrape the dirt off. But yeah, they're the fruit. You're not damaging any mycelium that's growing underground. What's growing underground is so much bigger than any of these fruit by a long shot. So much larger. You know, deadly Gallerina, they're just a little bitty mushroom, usually about that big. But they have that same toxin in them. Cortinarius, very pretty. The European species of this is quite poisonous. There's some question about the one that is, you know, related. And there's a lot of, I just was reading something from somebody that was suggesting that we've always considered this one poisonous and pointed everybody away from it. But there's there's an edible that you might get mixed up with this. And there's never been a reported poisoning in the United States. And so they're saying, you know, maybe they're not poisonous. That doesn't mean they're good to eat, but maybe they're not poisonous. Because they can't believe that nobody, you know, that nobody has stupidly mixed them up, you know, and happened to eat them.
Yeah.
You know, and the ones in Europe, the species in Europe will make you, I mean, you'll end up in the hospital kind of sick. Got your giant puffballs.
Seen those around.
No,
they're crazy.
I think they're when they're small or something.
Wrestling.
The species that are little, you know, there's little puffballs.
Okay, so that's a different species.
Different, totally different. I find those tastier.
Okay.
These I don't. These are kind of like the, they're kind of the tofu and mushrooms, you know. They're just whatever. Very, very not have, they don't carry a lot of flavor in and of themselves.
I don't think they're that great.
Hmm?
I just like to step on
them. Well, when they're like that, they don't do that. You only eat them when they're,
I always find
when they only eat them when they're pure white inside.
Yeah. Inside.
Yeah, like cream cheese. White.
So you want to cut it open? Oh, they start to
I usually cut them. I mean, if I'm concerned at all, usually once you've picked a few of them, you can tell by looking at them whether they're likely to be starting to change color.
I'm
going to
take my machete
and cut them open and look, you know, see how, so, you know, if they're changing color, starting to yellow at all, they're not any good anymore.
That's when you just stomp on them.
It's pretty wild when you find a patch of them that looks like something out of Alien.
Oh,
yeah, some alien things in the woods. Uh-huh. You know, who left all their volleyballs? You know, because sometimes, I mean, I've seen them where there's like 20 of them growing in the woods, and they're all like this big. You can see them a mile away. We have mushrooms that attack other mushrooms. This is a mushroom. That is a type of fungus that attacks another fungus. It attacks a Russula mushroom or a Lactarius mushroom and turns it into what's called a lobster mushroom. Now, the mushrooms that it attacks aren't poisonous, but they aren't really very good to eat either. Not particularly tasty. But once it's attacked, it ends up being a better mushroom to eat.
Interesting.
Yeah, and they can get pretty big too. I mean, I've seen them that are that big. Kind of a weird thing. Same kind of thing here. This is what's called an anteloma, and this is called an aborted anteloma. And they named it that because you often see these growing near antelomas. And so they thought it was that something had happened, you know, attacked the anteloma. And then they figured out that it was a honey mushroom. Except then the DNA got done.
Uh-huh.
So that's why they named it aborted anteloma. And it turns out it's really an aborted honey mushroom. It's the anteloma that's attacking the honey mushroom, not the other way around. And they can do the DNA on that and see what the host was, and they found out it's a honey mushroom. There's a guy on our former president of the Mycological Society. His favorite name for these is stump dumplings. he's trying to popularize that, calling them stump dumplings. And they're pretty tasty. The anteloma, while not poisonous, is not particularly good to eat. But, and the honey mushrooms. Then we have coral mushrooms. All kinds of pretty colors. I don't have a picture of a purple one here, but they're some pretty purple. No easy rules to follow. No things that say these mushrooms that are like this are poisonous, ones that are like this are not. Not in general.
About doing that sport print, I read about that.
Yep. So if we go back here and look, we had a good picture of a sport print.
Ones, right? From other ones.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, mostly this works on gill mushrooms. So, I mean, you can get spores on other kinds of mushrooms. I mean, sometimes you see mushrooms. I've seen pictures where people have mushrooms, and they're literally giving off spores sitting on the counter. They take a video of it. Looks like they're smoking.
Yeah.
It's just wild. But anyway, this is what's called a spore print. And so what you do is you take the cap of a gilled mushroom and you turn it over
on a piece of paper. Now, depending on what color the score print is, you might want white paper, you might want dark paper.
I'm actually heard that you're supposed to
put doing half and half.
Yeah.
And then it helps to put something over it, just to kind of eliminate, you know, air currents and stuff like that. So it drops the spores right on the paper and all the spores there. And then you can look and see what color the spores are.
Like overnight.
Yeah, overnight. And then you look and you'll see all the spores laying on the paper. And it's interesting. Some mushrooms that you would think would have a spore that matches the color of the mushroom don't, you know, and this one, while it looks a lot like a portobello mushroom, it has green spores rather than portobello has kind of dark chocolate colored spores. You know, you see it in the gills. When these mushrooms, you know, you can see the green appearing in the gills on this one, but if it were a younger mushroom, it might not show that, but the spores still will have that color.
You bury that piece of paper, then it spreads spores. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, again, they're not seeds.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
It's, but like you said, it's pollen.
It's like pollen. Right. Okay. And so you need like two, and I'm not really sure if you had two from the same mushroom. Whether
but how
they would
inoculated logs work then?
Well, that the inoculated logs, they're actually taking mycelium.
Oh, they're actually taking a mushroom.
They're actually taking the mycelium, the mushroom, and growing it on a substrate, and then taking that substrate, usually on like a dowel of wood, and you drill a hole in the and that, you know, pound it in there and, you know, cover it with a little bit of wax so it doesn't dry out, and then it colonizes the wood. Mm-hmm. Or they do it in straw or something like that if you buy the kits, you know. But yeah, that's it's kind of clone.
Okay.
You know, is all that it is. They're not doing anything with spores.
Okay.
I'm not really aware that any station is done using spores. That I'm aware of.
There's a place you probably know.
Even, you know, because they do grow cordyceps.
Yeah, I was just thinking of cordyceps. Yeah,
but that cordyceps is mycelium cordyceps. So they're growing, you know, certain species of cordyceps, not on an insect, but on something else.
Even with our speaker of an hour long, we are still confused about the mushrooms work.
Well,
I don't know.
They're, and even the people that are, like I say, it's very poorly studied. So there's all kinds of questions that we don't have answers to this piece. It's very difficult. And really, back when the Mycological Society was founded, think about it, there were really almost no books, internet, of course. And so, you know, all the information they had was very much more word of mouth. And it was in the late 1800s that the real study of mycology started happening, where in the 1800s, people really start, you know, there were scientists that were actually trying to name these things and come up with stuff. I have a friend, though, he has a book that it's like his family got it for him, saw it at a bookstore or something, and it's like a 14th century mushroom book from Italy. It's just, and with just unbelievable pictures. I mean, it's really old and written in Latin, and, you know, talking about, because in Italy they've picked mushrooms for centuries. And that's another thing, you know, people say, well, mushroom foraging, you know, what kind of impact was that? Well, in Europe, I admit, it's anecdotally, but they've been picking mushrooms
quite habitable for centuries, centuries. Very long time. And they still do to this day. Wiped out the mushrooms. They're still there.
Well, Peter, thank you.
Thank you for patiently listening to me.